Okay, well, just a little bit past 10 o'clock, so I might get underway. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this, which is the last day of Marxism 2011, Social Alternatives Annual Theoretical and Political Conference. My name's Dougal. I'm going to be chairing this session. I'm a member of the International Socialist Organisation in New Zealand. And I'm very happy to introduce Thanasis, our speaker today from the Internationalist Workers' Left in Greece. Those of you that have been to some of the sessions throughout the conference so far, hopefully we'll have had a chance to hear Thanasis beforehand. If you haven't, I'll just let you know it's a very great privilege and honour for us to have him at the conference this year. He's played a role in the really inspiring struggle against the austerity measures and the cutbacks which is going on in Greece at the moment, and he's of course involved in building a socialist organisation in Greece. I think it's particularly inspirational that we're going to have the chance to hear from him this morning. Of course, any of you that have seen the Sunday Age this morning have seen the sort of annual orgy of nationalism and pro-military sort of propaganda coming out on the eve of Anzac Day. But of course, there's a lot of hidden history around World War II. And, you know, one of the really inspiring stories that's been written out of history, of course, is of the revolutionary situation in Greece, which is what you're going to hear about this morning. If you're interested in what you do here, there's going to be a range of other talks against imperialism on sort of hidden histories of resistance through the day. And later in the afternoon, Tom O'Lincoln, a member of Socialist Alternative, is going to be launching a book about the Pacific War, the sort of the myth of the good war and other issues around Anzac Day there, which, while not sort of immediately speaking to the talk you'll hear this morning, I think do help to build up an alternative tradition. So without any further ado, I'll hand it over.
Good morning, comrades. I'll try to give you another argument why it is so necessary to build a strong revolutionary organization, because in times of revolution, it is very crucial who is in the leadership of big movements. So I'll try to describe what happened in Greece after World War II, which was actually not only the only country in Europe that there was resistance and there were hundreds of thousands of members of communist parties, and that this had their armed part, and that this armed part was ready to confront with the system and Nazis first and then the system. But in Greece, sometimes it is described like an exception with other countries in Europe, that the partisan movement was the only partisan movement that really confronted the alliance forces after World War II, where in all other situations, Italy, France, etc., these were the communist parties were a part of national unity governments after the war, and that step by step led to a, let's say, normalization of the situation and the entry of all these people, the movement, in the national, let's say, front. So we are going to talk today about this, why maybe Greece was something that happened in this way, but we are also going to talk that what happened in Greece was not a unique phenomenon. I mean, the resistance movement and also the civil war afterwards, etc., but it was in the current of that era in Europe, where in a different way, but in several countries, class struggle was very, very strong, and people did not want to live again the nightmares of the 30s, of crisis, and wanted a new society, far from all these problems that they had in the 30s. Second World War was considered by the imperialists, by the big forces, was considered an anti-fascist war, a war against the Nazis, and this is what they believed, what people believed, the majority of people. The truth is that Second World War was an imperialist war, a war that was a war for resharing the spheres of influence of the big powers, and this is going to be something that is going to be proved, I think, from what I'm going to say. But for workers, it was a fight against fascism, a fight against the forces of the system in each country that supported Nazis, and inevitably, I would say, in every case, not only in Greece, it was finally, with the end of World War II, a confrontation between the workers and all the system powers. Trotsky thought that revolutions will explode after World War II. This is, finally, we know that it was not a correct estimation. He thought that, like after World War I, also in World War II, the big revolutions would happen all over Europe, etc. But let's take things from the beginning. And it's necessary that there is a historical part that is necessary for you, maybe that you don't have not heard so much about Greece and what's going on, etc., and Europe to start with. So I want to start with saying that workers' movement in Greece was in the front line of resistance against Nazis. It was not like, you know, after years and years, also in Greece, it is supposed to be the resistance to be in the mountains, some people with beards and guns who fight heroically against the Nazis and then fight against the others, etc. Actually, this is a part of the truth, but all these armed forces had multiple non-armed forces in the towns that consisted a very, very strong workers' movement, even from 20s and 30s. In Greece, the main unions that happened to exist in World War II were built in an uprise of the working movement with numerous strikes, very big fights, and certain victories within the 20s and 30s. So what is the outcome of this is that when Nazis invade Greece and Nazis enter Athens in 1941, what's going on is that they find the working class in this uprise. And there, inside the occupation, there are huge strikes. There are strikes in several sectors, strikes for bread, nutrition, which was very crucial at that point, because with the occupation, the towns suffered a lot in Greece from lack of nutrition. I mean, people in the winter of 1941 were dying like flies. People were walking in Athens, losing their conscience and falling down and dying from starvation. And this was one very, very, very crucial point for workers to fight for, to have proper nutrition. There were queues of people trying to get some kind of bread, which was not bread actually, people who wanted to get some soup, which was not soup actually. You know, I remember my grandmother saying that they were making soup out of the, you know, what is this? You wiped with the sweepers. They were cutting the sweepers and trying to boil the brush. So this was the situation, and in that situation, many big and small and big strikes happened. I will refer in the two biggest ones. On April 1942, it is a big strike of public servants in Athens and Thessaloniki, in post offices, telephone services, and telegraph. Although this is a strike that nothing works. Although it is hit by policemen, several people are arrested. It wins. They win raises in salaries and better nutrition. Another big strike was 4th and 5th of March 1943, which was not a strike, which was more a political strike. It's a general strike in Greece, with a massive demonstration in Athens of maybe 500,000 people. At that time, Athenian population was 2 million. A general strike which is against the transfer of Greek workers to Germany in order to work in factories there, to go to concentration camps for volunteer work, and also to fight against Russians in the Eastern Front. So during these days, nothing is working in Athens. Bakery shops don't open. Everything is completely dead. There are 5 murdered workers from police. When a big group of workers enters the Ministry of Labor, tries to get the lists of the candidates to go to Germany and burns all these lists, and police enters and shoots against them. So although these things happened in other European countries like Holland, maybe not so massively, but happened, like general strikes against the transfer to Germany, Greece is the only country that finally nobody is going to go to Germany. It is some days after, the Germans issue a decision, an official decision, that this is cancelled. So this is just to show you that there was class resistance in the towns during the occupation also. Where was this based? How all these people could mobilize at that time, with the danger of their lives, etc.? So the main mechanism for this resistance is EAM. EAM, Greek, means National Liberation Front. This is the political part, not the army part. EAM is created on September 1941, 6 months after the Nazi invasion, and it is not by chance that the Labour EAM, which is workers in the unions, is even earlier built, 2 months earlier, and in July, and EAM is consisted of Communist Party, which is the great power, Socialist Party of Greece, nothing to do with what we mean today, Socialist Party in Greece, Peasants Party, and some smaller groups, and some individual politicians, bourgeois politicians that want to fight against the occupation. EAM has reached in its top 1,600,000 members in Greece. Communist Party at that time 400,000 members. Elas was the armed part of EAM and had 130,000 members, armed workers. So Elas and peasants. Elas mainly existed in rural areas, but there was a supplementary force of Elas with light infantry of around 30,000 soldiers that was in Athens. It was called the support of Elas. But this was light infantry, mainly in the suburbs of Athens and the very poor neighborhoods of Athens where the armament was hidden, and they were taking the arms for sabotages and such things. So what was the scope of EAM as Communist Party posed it? It was national liberation and from the Nazis, and after liberation, free elections for a new constitution, which means that it was not revolution, a socialist revolution. It was mainly national liberation. And they were leaving open what kind of new democracy would happen. So if it would be the democracy like the Western ones, if it would be something else, like maybe people's democracy that we know that in many countries happened after World War of Eastern Bloc. They were talking for people to the power. This was what they're talking about. And they have the alliance of all these parties that I told you. But Greek ruling class, of course, does not participate in EAM and ELAS. Greek ruling class is somehow divided, although it was an alliance of the British, etc. There are two parts after the occupation. One that cooperates with the Nazis. Another one that leaves Greece and goes to Middle East, Egypt. So the one that cooperates with the Nazis has the prime minister, which is set by the Nazis, not elected, and they are forming some fascist organizations who help Nazis within the occupation. Another part of the bourgeois form some national liberation organizations apart from ELAS, because like EDES and ECA, these are their names, who are not as numerous as ELAS, of course, some few thousands, and they don't have parts in the cities, only in the mountains, but they try to prove that communists are not the only resistance. Or not the only resistance and occupation. But many times they finally cooperate, especially after 1943, with the pro-Nazi fascist organization against EAM and ELAS power. So, and there is the liberal and center-right politicians who live to Middle East. They cooperate with British. They try to bring EAM into the national umbrella, because they understand that the power of EAM is enormous and they're not going to have a good conclusion if they don't bring them inside the national front. They managed to do that on 1944, May, where there is an agreement signed by all of them in Lebanon that is forming a government of national unity even before the Nazis leave Greece. Prime Minister is George Papandreou, who is the grandfather of George Papandreou now. And later, in September 1944, in Caserta of Italy, there is a second agreement between British Minister of Middle East, Harold Macmillan, British General of Mediterranean Sea Troops, Wilson, representatives of National Unity Government, Papandreou and others, and EAM and ELAS representatives, and the agreement is, first, after the liberation, all ELAS troops will move under British General Scobie control, and ELAS accepts that. Second, all fascist troops, the pro-Nazi organization, etc., will be eliminated. This was a demand from ELAS. Third, the left will participate in the government with 5 ministers out of 14 or 15. Later on, much later, the Communist Party announces that both agreements were historical mistakes, but never said why, and who had to be blamed, and why this happened. And actually, the first major mistake was not a mistake, actually. It was the policy of Popular Front tactics for liberation, no revolution, that was not the case only in Greece, but for the Communist parties all over Europe. We are going to talk a little bit more about that later. And there is another explanation about these mistakes. This is the Stalin foreign policy at the time of the war. Stalin, who led the 30s counter-revolution in Russia, that was the leader that wanted Russia, Soviet Union, to reach and proceed further from the West, that before the war was not anti-fascist war for him at all, because they had an agreement, Stalin and Hitler, the so-called Molotov-Ribbentrop agreement for no attack, no mutual attack, which agreement is broken by the Nazis in June 1941 when they invade into Russia. And Russia at that time turns towards Britain and United States, asks for help, and tries to build the Eastern Front in Europe. The British and US accepts, because for them also, for their interests, it's very, very useful, this front. They postpone and postpone the Western Front. And after the war, Russia occupies one third of Europe. Russian army, not with revolutions, but with Stalinist Red Army that enters the Eastern Bloc countries, like Poland, like half of Germany, you know, all this stuff. And except from this one third of Europe, there are strong communist parties in other Western countries in Europe, plus strong partisan movement that remain. And this is also a strength for Stalin. So in February 1945, there is a Yalta meeting. Yalta is a town where Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin are met. Before, there was another meeting, October 1944, in Moscow, between Churchill and Stalin. And there is the reassurance of influence zones. Greece, kind of agreement, for British is very, very important. For the British, Greece is a very important point in Eastern Mediterranean, like Egypt with Suez Channel, that reassures the way towards India, which is a very important colony. So Churchill is very, very hostile to EAM and Communist Party in Greece. Yugoslavia is not maybe so important for the British. In Yugoslavia, Churchill supports Tito, actually. And there is an agreement of something like 50-50 between West and East at that time for Yugoslavia. But Greece is not the same. For Stalin, Greece is mainly propaganda. It's not something very crucial for the vital zone, let's say, of that imperialist, the East imperialism at that time. So he accepts that Greece belongs to West. Sometimes he uses Greece to confront his allies in order to get Poland or other more crucial countries for the Eastern Bloc. So Greece is supposed to remain Western. But what is going wrong? We were talking about that. In December 1944, just after the Nazis leave Athens, there is a big fight between Elas, and the British in Athens. The facts are, 12th October 1944, Nazis leave Athens. End of October, the government of national unity presents themselves in Athens. They arrive in Athens from Cairo. But this government is very weak in terms of politicians of right and center right that nobody knows. They have no army, only some fascist groups to handle with. The police is very weak, something like shadow of police. And they have some small national resistance organization separate from Elas. So on the other side, the other part of this national unity government is not very weak. Elas already occupies two-thirds of the country. Communist Party has 400,000 members, and EAM 1,600,000 members, followed by other millions. So, but EAM is also, they are also members of the government. So they have the Ministry of Economy. So in November 1944, there is an austerity plan by EAM, Minister of Economy, with a new coin drachma, a new drachma, with very tight budget, and with very, very low salaries for public servants. There is huge unemployment, and strikes break through in the public sector. There are occupation of closed factories also from workers that start working them again to produce goods, to sell them, etc. And there is another communist party minister of labor force who is trying to stop strikes, saying that reconstruction of the country is the main purpose now and not revolution. There are political also problems for Elas, like leaders of Elas who do not accept the participation of the EAM and Elas in the government of national unity, who live towards the mountains and try to form their own separate armies. One of them is a figure called Aris Veluchiotis, who is a guy with a big beard, etc. He's an heroic figure with around 100 or 200 militant peasants, maybe more, that goes to the mountains and after some time is killed, slaughtered by the National Unity Police. So there is at that time, to make you feel a little bit the panic of Greek ruling class, a telegraph of Mr. Papandreou to London. He's saying, September, even before Nazis out. Unfortunately, during our meetings, we realized there is the unbelievable fact that there are not at all today valid alliance troops, so that they can liberate Greece, except from a small group of British troops that is only for Athens. Conclusion of that is, first, liberation will be considered, EAM is doing that. which will occupy at once all the regions that Germans will leave. And second, that the government that is going to go to Athens and without British strong troops will be actually hostages. We will be hostages of the army. So they're asking for troops. And the panic is leading them against the treaties that they signed to ask for immediate demilitarization of the army. Demilitarization. This is not acceptable, not by the army at that time so much, but from the base organizations of Elas and Eam in the towns and on the mountain. They cannot understand why they should give their arms, that it's they are the strongest power in Greece. They think that we are in front of the power. We deserve the power. People deserve the power because we liberated Greece. We are the resistance. Nobody else has to do with that. And they have the vast majority of the people with them. So in December, Communist Party leadership is forced to resign from EAM government. From government. EAM ministers resign. And there is an open conflict. But for Communist Party, they don't want to go too much. 3rd of December, Skobi, the British general in Greece, asks for immediate EAM disarmament too. There is a peaceful demonstration of some thousands of EAM in Athens, which is shot by the police. And there are dead people. And this is something that Communist Party cannot afford anymore. So Communist Party answers back. Next day, there is a general strike, 4th of December, 1944. This is not a one-day general strike. For 43 days, workers, Elas troops only of Athens, because others, the agreement said that had to stay away, etc., on the mountains and whatever. Only 30,000 light infantry of Elas fights against police and British troops and pro-Nazi organizations. 23 out of 25 police stations are occupied in Athens by EAM. Fascist organizations are cleaned up, are wiped up from everywhere. Power of the government remains only in a small square in Athens of less than, maybe a circle of less than 500 meters radius. It's Parliament. The Constitution Square in front of the Parliament and Great Britain Hotel next to the Parliament. So, EAM should not take the power and EAM should not fight with British soldiers. There are very few British soldiers at that time, maybe 2,000. And EAM fighters in front of ministries with the arms are in front of a ministry, and if a single British soldier is in front of the door, they don't enter. So British troops are coming after 10 days. British troops come from Italian front and also combat aircraft that throw bombs at all neighborhoods of Athens and Piraeus. They devastate whole blocks. They open a way from Piraeus to Athens, and 40,000 British troops arrive to Athens. In 5th of January, Elas troops withdraw from Athens. So there are many people dead, many wounded. And after that, although the main power of EAM still exists, there is something like, we haven't won yet, but the power is here for people. all the armed force is already there. It has not, I mean, they don't defeat any army, etc. They withdraw. But they sign one more agreement. Varkis agreement. Varkis is a suburb of Athens for disarmament of Hellas. So the Communist Party, still, and EAM influence remains very, very big. December is a defeat, but not a disaster. Some weapons are hidden, but the majority of the weapons are given to the British and the national government, where EAM does not participate anymore. But this is not the end of the movement. I told you that working class is very strong. In May Day 1945, 40,000 people make a big rally in Athens, which is around 5% of Athens' population at that time. In spring 1945, there are big strikes in cigarette industries and textiles. For example, Thessaloniki, they win raises of 125%. There are no political demands at this time in labor struggles, but the forces that move that is according to the elections for the unions. Labor EAM, 71%. Bosses unions, 21%, and others, 8%. In the 8th conference of March 1946, of National Confederation, 1,100 out of 1,400 representatives are EAM representatives. 7 governments changed till March 1946. 7 governments. March 1946 is supposed to be the elections, the first free elections. EAM does not participate to this election. But why? It is forced not to do it. Because there is system terrorism. In the meanwhile, 1,200 people are murdered, 6,600 people are wounded, 31,000 are tortured, and over 80,000 arrested, and 677 attacks at EAM and Communist Party offices. This from police, although Communist Party and EAM is not illegal yet, and from pro-Nazi fascist organizations. Next government, numbers and votes are cooked in these elections, etc. And next government is a monarchy-friendly government, right-wing party. And immediately they bring a law that conviction, sentence to life is sentence to life conviction if somebody attempts to detach part of the territory. That is a photograph for Hellas. No strikes in public services are allowed anymore. And thousands of union members are arrested because of that. Typically, Communist Party is not illegal, but in October 1947, there is no network anymore to do this job, to distribute the Communist Party and EAM leaflets and newspapers, because the backbone, which is the labor class and militant labor workers, is smashed. So, this is the beginning of civil war. At that time, Communist Party decides that many fighters go again to the mountains. Many of them have already been to the mountains because they couldn't suffer all that. They didn't give their weapons and took it with them outside of Athens and main towns. And Communist Party decides that this is the third round of the struggle. But no movement is not in the uprise anymore. Town's Communist Party mechanism is destroyed. People are afraid and have no networks anymore. Battles are moved to the mountains, and this makes this worse for the left. And Communist Party does not even ask for its members to go to the mountains if they suffer, just organize the existing ones. So the final defeat comes in 1949, with the final battle over a mountain in Greece, Gramos and Vici, where thousands of partisans are killed. And May 1949 is also the day where Tito closes the borders. Because of Tito and Stalin conflict, Tito signed some agreements with the West and is not friendly to Stalin anymore and to the Communist Party also. So, Communist Party can be described at that time as an armed reformism. It is maybe seems contradictory, but it is not at all. They signed Lebanon and Caserta agreements to put Greece in the way of France and Italy. In December 1944, they are just forced to fight because British and the system is very afraid and provokes them. And their base is very militant and they cannot ignore it. Number three, although this happens, Communist Party is constantly trying to come back to government after that. Disarmament agreement, their words are national friendship. Even when they are slaughtered in the towns, they are talking about the need of national friendship, of steady democratic development, all this bullshit. The same tactics even with the first battles in the mountains, 1947, the same thing. But arms for Communist Party is just the pressure for democracy. Is not the way for the power to workers' power for changing the system. The system never says yes to Communist Party, to this national friendship, especially after the 7th, 1944, because they are very, very afraid. So all that from Communist Party and EAM after that were just symbolic pressure. Even the civil war, just symbolic pressure to come back to what they wanted, to come back to the government and national unity. So the reasons of defeat in Greece, as we could conclude, is the Stalinist politics of popular fronts even before war that also led to Spain. To be massacred in 1936, all the militant workers, France to lose 1936 in the wave of big industry occupations and strikes, and Greece to lose in 1936 in Thessaloniki, where there was a real revolution and occupation of factories for all the northern Greece, which the Communist Party put down, and after that there was a dictatorship in Greece from 36 till the Nazis came. That was before the war. During the war, the second point of reasons of defeat, it was the so-called strategy for development of Greek capitalism at that time from semi-feudal Greek capitalism, as they said it was, to a real capitalism. So they didn't think it was a real capitalism. Although the percentage of working class was not the majority in the society, peasants was, but the percentage was much bigger than what it was in Russian Revolution, for example. And the militant workers was so decided, and it was the main force in Greece, as we saw. So this turn from internationalism to stages policy, to not revolution, but popular democracy, etc., etc., happens in January 1934. And third reason for the defeat was Stalin's exterior policy. As we saw, the Eastern Bloc should be left, should be able to develop after World War. Participation only in governments in the West, so that they have as friendly governments as possible to their external policy, Stalin's external policy after the war. This was very crucial also. I will not go further at this point because I have talked a lot. Okay. The rest we can have questions when we are talking about the rest afterwards. For example, were other forces of the left, maybe Trotsky's over there in Greece, what happened, or other stuff, I don't know.